Giants. That's belted deep left center field. Could be another one. It's up, up, and yes, sir, there goes another one. Home run, Yunel Escobar. That's his first. And now the Blue Jays have soared out in front of the Orioles, 4-3 here in the bottom of the fifth.
Jays' second home run of the inning, third of the ball game, gave them a 4-3 lead that they gave right back in the top of the sixth as Adam Jones took Brandon Morrow deep. Second home run Morrow gave up. But in the bottom of the sixth, Edwin Encarnacion went deep for the Blue Jays' fourth home run of the night. They had hit a grand total of four home runs on the season going into tonight. But they were all solo shots tonight, and the Blue Jays were 0-for-5 with runners in scoring position. And ultimately, they weren't able to hold on to the lead, as in the top of the eighth inning, Jason Frazier gave up a leadoff single to Nolan Reimold, who then stole second after J.J. Hardy struck out. On came Nick Markakis to face Darren Oliver, the Blue Jays lefty, who gave up an infield single on a slow roller to second base to Markakis. Then after striking out Adam Jones, he pitched around Matt Wieters and walked him. And Wilson Bediment hit a single up the middle to cash a pair and give the Orioles the lead for good. They would go on to the 7-5 win. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk. The phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. This was a tough one to lose, especially against the Baltimore Orioles. You have a lead late, but anytime you have a lead late, you expect to close out a game, and it's a tough one to lose, especially since it's that same problem that the Blue Jays had last year, even with the reworked bullpen, their third blown save already this season in just seven games. But how did it break down? We had a talk on Twitter with a lot of people going over the whys and wherefores of this. Jason Frazier comes in to face the two righties, and then Darren Oliver comes in to face the lefty Markakis and get through the righty Adam Jones to turn around switch hitters Matt Wieters and Wilson Bediment. Although, you have Casey Jansen up in the bullpen, who is a right-handed pitcher who tends to be better against left-handed hitters. But I think, and we'll hear from John Farrell a little bit later on, I think that Oliver stuck around to turn Bediment around, who is a much better hitter left-handed than he is right-handed. Career OPS of 814 against righties, against lefties, it's just 683. Matt Wieters is going to hurt you either way. So you pitch around Wieters, which Oliver did. You try to get him to get himself out. He didn't. He walked. And then you take your chances turning around Bediment to let the lefty face him. Thinking that's how John Farrell went, and again, we will hear from him a little bit later on. It did not work out. So people were suggesting that Oliver should have been yanked because he had nothing today, and that's ridiculous. Nick Markakis managed to make it to first base on a high chopper to second that was not hit well at all. He then strikes out the righty Jones and walks Wieters while pitching around him. So there's no indication at all that Darren Oliver didn't have it today. Asked on Twitter, why didn't Farrell take out the lefty versus righty on two separate occasions? Again, they're both switch hitters. Let's go to Douglas in Toronto. You're going to lead things off on the Blue Jays Talk.
Oh, hi, Michael. Well, unfortunately, we lost one. Well, we'd all take one for the team. Anyways, I just wondered if the success that we had in the beginning of the season, so to speak, were to continue, would it? Do you believe it would stem from pitching or batting? And also, I wanted to hear your take on Sergio Santos.
Okay, I believe pretty much all the success that this team has is going to come from the pitching. I think the hitting is going to be there. It hasn't been to this point, and they managed seven hits tonight, which was nice, four home runs, which were very nice, but again, all solo homers, and the offense has been a problem seven games into the season, but it's going to come down to pitching. If the pitching comes through, the Blue Jays will be very successful. If they have trouble getting good starts out of guys, if the bullpen is coughing up leads, there are going to be issues, but the core success of this team is going to come on the mound. And my take on Sergio Santos is He's great. And he's got a really, really good future ahead of him. You know, you don't put up the numbers that Sergio Santos put up last year by accident. He's not going to be perfect, very obviously. We've already seen him blow two saves. But long term and for a while, you know, this is a special arm, and one that I'm very happy to have here as a guy who's probably going to be the closer for the next 6 years.
Mm-hmm. So you do think he will eventually become come out of the bullpen and possibly be the closer, in the rotation.
He already is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thank you for the call, Douglas. Appreciate it. We move on. We've got a lot to get to. We have a couple of phone lines open at 416-870-0590, *590, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. Sergio Santos is not here today. Had a son, Troy Gabriel, yesterday in California. He is expected to rejoin the team tomorrow. Not sure whether or not he'll be here by game time. He wouldn't have pitched today anyway, but Francisco Cordero would have been the guy to come in and pitch the eighth inning instead of having Jason Fraser, Darren Oliver, and Casey Jansen all come in to do it. So who knows what the possible result would have been. We'll take more of your phone calls in a second, but first, let's listen in on what the skipper had to say. Here's John Farrell's post-game comments.
Kind of an odd game in here tonight. The way the ball was flying out of the ballpark, the number of home runs that were hit. You look back at the eighth inning and a ground ball that goes off Yunel's glove, another infield single that doesn't quite go 75 feet. We get the strike out of Jones to get the two outs, and then a ground ball base hit up the middle from Betterment. But, you know, I like the way we swung the bats tonight. I thought Brandon elevated a couple of pitches that were squared up, but I think as the middle innings came along, his stuff got more sharp. His secondary stuff, particularly his slider, became more of a put-away pitch. But not to take anything away from Baltimore, they swung the bat well tonight.
John, can you just take us back to the eighth inning and talk about the mindset to keep Darren in there for as long as you did?
You know, certainly to come in and get Markakis, but the matchup ended up being Betterment. Wanted him hitting right-handed, as well as Wieters came into this series swinging the bat. We were okay with somewhat pitching around him with second base still being open, and wanted Betterment to be hitting right-handed in that situation. But unfortunately, we got to that point even after the strikeout of Jones and the ground ball to Markakis that didn't quite go far enough to record the out.
John, did you feel that Brandon was diversifying his repertoire as much as he did in his first start?
He didn't have quite the feel for his curveball tonight, so he was altering the speeds on a slider more than he did in Cleveland, where it was more of a defined pitch, his curveball. So he threw a couple early in the game that ended up and into right-handers where, like I said, he didn't have the feel that he's shown through spring training and in his first start this season. But he threw a number of change-ups to left-handers. So I wouldn't say his pitch mix or his distribution was anything drastically different. Just when he made a mistake up in the zone, they covered it.
There he is, the skipper, John Farrell, explaining why he stuck with Darren Oliver. And it's as we expected, as I'd mentioned earlier, you want Wilson Betemit hitting right-handed in that situation. Now, maybe that's managing to the Orioles' weaknesses as opposed to the Blue Jays' strengths. Maybe, but Darren Oliver was a very effective hitter against Darren Oliver was a very effective pitcher against right-handed hitters last season and has been for a little bit. Questions are being asked on Twitter about the blown save, why it's Darren Oliver's when Jason Fraser was charged with the tying run. The answer is simple. When Jason Fraser left the game, the save situation was still intact. If Darren Oliver had finished the game from that point, he would have gotten the save. Therefore, he gives up the lead. He gets the blown save. Back to the phones we go. 416-870-0590. *590 on the cell. Long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We go to Kirk in Toronto. Kirk, welcome to Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, Mike. Yeah, I'm just outside the Rogers Center right now. It's actually a really good crowd, even for a loss.
I thought so, too. I thought, before the game started, it really was really empty in here, and it filled up nicely as the game went on, and the crowd really got into it.
Yeah, I was talking to some of the employees, and they were even saying that the crowd was filling up pretty slow, but once everyone got in there, it seemed to work out pretty well. And plus, they had the wave going on. That was really good. And, you know, everyone outside seemed pretty happy. No one, sky isn't falling in Toronto, I'll tell you that.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah. And one thing, I don't know about Laurie. He looked pretty bad today. What do you think about Laurie? You think he'll come through again?
Well, I think expecting him to put up the MVP numbers he put up last year in his short stint was quite a bit to expect. But he's going through it like a lot of Blue Jays are going through it. You know, he was got an infield single today, so he made it on base with his legs, but that was his first hit to snap an 0-for-7. And really none of these guys are hitting yet this year, with the exception of Kelly Johnson. So, you know, seven games into the season, you can't really draw any conclusions about what a guy's done, how he's going to do, anything like that. You have to give him time.
Yeah, I find I'm pretty lucky, actually, with a 4-2 record of some of the averages that they're posting up right now.
Yeah, but not, so, with, you know, not with the job that they've done on the mound.
That's true.
As the offense has been, the pitching's been that good again.
But still, they have maybe like the second or third most runs in the league right now. That's pretty good for having averages like that.
Do they? I don't know if that's true.
I'm not too sure. I heard that somewhere. I don't know.
I'll see about that.
Okay.
Thank you, Kirk.
Okay.
Appreciate the call. The Blue Jays, coming into this game, had scored 29 runs, which ranked them fifth going into the game. So fifth in runs, despite being 12th in batting average. That's pretty interesting. And you tack on seven more, give them 36 runs right now, which still trails Detroit. And Boston got 12. So they're still behind them. Pending Seattle, the Blue Jays now are second in the league in runs scored. Wow. That's pretty impressive, given everything else that they've had to deal with. Let's go out to Hamilton. Stan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Mike. I agree. I think we kind of got sucked in. I would have went with Jansen and used our strength rather than try to focus on a weakness on the Baltimore side. I thought Oliver, yeah, he looked okay, but that last pitch, he almost threw it in the dugout. And Jansen,
well, you're trying to pitch around a guy, though. I mean, don't forget, right?
Yeah. But he threw quite a few pitches, Oliver, right? I don't know. I thought Jansen, the way he's performed the last 2 years, I just thought it made a lot of sense to bring him in.
It's an interesting debate. I mean, it really is. Do you go to your strength? Do you go to their weakness? And today, John Farrell chose their weakness.
Yeah. The other thing is, I think Rasmus is, even though his batting average is not there, he's hit the ball pretty solid the last 3 or 4 games, so I think he's going to come around. I think the Jays fans, actually, I think he's been one of the more solid hitters as far as hitting the ball. Like the average doesn't show it, but he's do you not agree that he's been hit the ball pretty solid?
Rasmus, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So
it's,
I think,
seven games. Seven games.
The
lots
Jays
of things
fans
can
have been on him pretty good the last. Yeah. He joined the Jays, but you know the way he's played in the outfield, and I do think that he's. I guess, yeah, he looks like he's coming along pretty good. One other question. JP and Sirby and Bunning, what are your thoughts on that? I mean,
I'm wondering if he didn't do that on his own.
Oh, okay.
You know, Darren O'Day is a tough matchup for a right-handed hitter, and he's a tough matchup, that side-arming righty, especially for a right-handed hitter who's struggling. Mm-hmm. So, and JP is certainly struggling right now, like a lot of his teammates. So I don't know if he went and did that on his own, the bunt in the seventh inning after Rasmus had let off with a walk, or if he was told to do that. I don't love it, obviously. I don't love it. But Aaron Seabee has had a rough time, and he's especially had a rough time with the strikeouts so far this season. And at that point, he'd struck out in nearly half of his at-bats against right-handed pitching. So not the worst thing in the world to do.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
All right. Thanks for the call. And there's no right answer tonight. I mean, the result shows that the wrong decision was made, but very often the right decision can lead to the wrong result, and the wrong decision can lead to the right result. The question is, where are you most comfortable? Darren Oliver against Wilson Betemit, because Betemit has trouble, well, has more trouble hitting right-handed, or Casey Jansen, who's done very well against left-handed hitters, even though you make Betemit a much stronger hitter. And it's not like Darren Oliver is terrible against righties. Last year against right-handed hitters, posted a 594 OPS, which is amazing. And it was about the same against lefties, within 7 points either way. 2 years ago, righties hit him a lot harder than lefties did. So it's not as though Oliver has been great against righties his whole career. But he was very good against them last year. And in Betemit, you have a guy who's 130 points of OPS worse hitting against lefties. Back to the phones we go. On the Blue Jays talk, it is Dave in Toronto. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on. First call of the season.
Thanks for calling.
Listen, you know, tonight was it's a tough game, but I mean, gosh, it's so early in the season. I mean, in 162, you're going to get the bullpen some nights that things like this are going to happen. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Brandon Morrow. I found I'm like you, very high on his stuff, and I think his ceiling is really high. I mean, he's a fun guy to watch pitch. But I found John Farrell's comments interesting, and I want to get your take on what you think Brandon Morrow needs to work on the most to kind of get to that next level. I find that he's kind of leveled off as far as, you know, his performance. Tonight in the game when I was watching
him, he threw seven innings of one hitter in his last start.
Well, I know. I mean, when I
there's
when
no
I was,
well, you know about that. He threw seven innings of one hitter in his last start. I don't know how you can say he's leveled off.
Well, when I watched him tonight, and at times when he struggles, and I want to draw this parallel to some other guys when they struggle.
Sure.
He's got such great stuff, but I found tonight, even early in the game, John Farrell said in the post game that he was struggling with some of his secondary stuff with his slider, and I find that he kind of battles, and I wanted to get your take on this. He battles sometimes overthrowing, where sometimes his landing point isn't necessarily the best when he's overthrowing. He kind of doesn't get on top of his ball, or he sometimes tries to overpower that fastball, and his location or control isn't necessarily all that great. And it's kind of the difference between, I've heard people talk about the difference between being a thrower and a real pitcher. And I'm not sure what you think about that, because I mean, sometimes he's just absolutely unbelievable, but sometimes where he doesn't have his best stuff, I want to see him grind through sometimes a little bit better and kind of battle with that secondary stuff. When he doesn't have his number one pitch or he doesn't have his location, I want to see him kind of be able to do better and be able to divert with some of that secondary stuff and still, whether it's pitch to contact, still be able to sometimes get outs. And I found very early in tonight's game, he could have really put his team behind even a lot more than they were. And I'm just wondering what you think about some of that stuff about Brandon Morrow, because I think if he can, he goes to the next level with more consistency and better performance.
I think he did a lot of the stuff tonight that you're looking for him to do. I mean, he didn't have his best stuff. He still gutted out seven innings. He gave up four runs, which is not wonderful, but, you know, when you don't have your stuff, how many times are you going to give up two runs over seven innings? In earlier years, this might have been a time where we saw him get knocked out in the third or fourth.
But he gave up the long ball tonight, right?
He's a fly ball pitcher. That's going to happen. He gave up two home runs, and neither of them came with anybody on base. I think tonight he did exactly what you're asking for him to do.
Did he give up a home run in Cleveland as well, though?
Yes.
Yeah, so in two starts, I mean, as much as he was really sharp in Cleveland, I don't want to say he wasn't. I mean, three home runs in two starts.
The home run he gave up in Cleveland was the only hit he gave up. This start, we both agree that he didn't come to it with his best stuff. I don't know what you're expecting.
I think you might have to
reset your expectations, because you're right. You know, a lot of the things you said are exactly right. He's in the process of making this transition from thrower to pitcher. And that's what he spent all spring doing and working on the changeup and the curveball so he doesn't have to always be a fastball slider guy who's looking to strike people out and has thrown 98 pitches by the time the fifth inning rolls around. So it's a process. And, it was beautiful in his first start last Saturday. It was less beautiful tonight, but he was still really effective tonight.
When he left the game in the seventh, was his pitch count high tonight? I don't remember.
104 pitches in seven innings.
How many, sorry?
104 pitches in seven innings.
So for seven innings, it's still relatively high. No?
That's fine.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
Fine.
Maybe he might listen.
It sounds like you want him to be perfect.
My assessment's off. I guess I just, like I said at the beginning of the call, that's why I wanted to get your perspective. You see the same things I do. You're obviously happier with the performance. I wasn't unhappy with the performance. He's an enigma sometimes to me, and I sometimes, maybe my expectation is off, and I expect him to be better than he should be. I watched this on the broadcast tonight, and even his last four starts to end the season, he was 4-0, and his numbers were good the end of last season. So I guess maybe I'm a little bit harder on him than I should be, but I just see the ceiling to be still so high with him, and I want him to just be such a great guy. I think he could be a number one on a lot of teams.
I think he could too, but he's still working towards that, and I think that the number one on a lot of teams, when he comes to a game where he doesn't have his best stuff, is going to give up four runs in seven innings.
Okay, good enough. Right. Thanks for having me on, Mike. Good job.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. We're in the same place. I just think your expectations are higher, and you're not, by no means are you alone there. There are a lot of people who believe that a bullpen should never give up a run, that a starter can't give up more than a run or two, otherwise he had a terrible day. But I think Brandon Morrow did exactly what you're saying. He didn't have his best stuff. He got knocked around today, and yet he still went seven. He still left with the lead. And I don't think you can ask for more from a guy who's not having a good day. Susan is in Toronto. Hello, Susan.
Yes, good evening, Mike. We're just leaving the Dome, and it was an extremely entertaining game, as you have noticed, obviously you talked about, but, disappointing ending.
Yep.
But nonetheless, I just wanted to ask your opinion on why they actually took Thames out and put in Rajay Davis. Is that a comment on the defensive? Like, what was the reasoning for that?
That's to improve your defense with a one-run lead late in the game. Plain and simple.
Is it just a matter that he just doesn't have that or is not as good as Rajay?
He's not nearly as good as Rajay Davis. Eric Thames, he seemed in the spring to make himself into a decent defensive outfielder, but he's had a few plays so far in the first week of the season that have really gone the other way. So he hasn't exactly earned the faith of the team late in games with his defense. But I'm interested to find out if John Farrell is going to maybe wait a little bit to make that move, because he really could have used Rajay as a pinch runner in the bottom of the eighth inning. And this is already the second time this season where the perfect pinch running opportunities come up for Davis. He hasn't been able to be used because he's already been in the game as a defensive replacement. So I wonder if we're going to see those defensive moves starting to come a little bit later on.
And also, have you any numbers on how Travis Snyder's doing in Vegas?
I think he hit a grand slam tonight, last I heard.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. And you know what? I'm sure that they don't want to have a short leash on Eric Thames. They don't want to yank the rug right out from under him a week or two into the season. But having Travis Snyder here would allow you to use Rajay as more of a weapon, because you don't have to replace him for defense.
Yep.
And Snyder is 3-for-4 today. He did hit a grand slam.
Oh, my goodness.
He is hitting .419 to this point with an OPS of 1,300 down there in Las Vegas. But again, offensive numbers very inflated, and we're talking about a week's worth of games, not even for Travis. So Travis is only 31 at-bats in. So it's very early yet.
No doubt. It's just that you know, as you've indicated before, I mean, no game is less important. And yes, I know it's early days, but nonetheless, these are games that you should be trying to turn around to your to the win column.
Well, there's no question that they were trying. They just didn't get it done. Baltimore's trying just as much. You got to remember that, too.
True, and they were trying to stop their skids, so obviously maybe they were a little more motivated.
I don't think so at all. I think that they just won tonight, and that's the way it works. Wow. You know what? Everybody's 4-3.
I'm telling you, Markakis looked like an all-star. You know, he really did. Like, it was incredible the way, you know, it was a tough at-bat every time he was up.
He's a good hitter.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He's a good hitter. He's a tough at-bat.
Interesting game, and I mean, clearly there's a different vibe in the, I mean, even for a Friday night crowd, it was like 21-9, and I mean, that's paid attendance, so I mean, with the comps and that, because it certainly looked like a bigger crowd than that.
It did, and it felt like a bigger crowd, too. Thank you, Susan. I appreciate the call. We are going to extend the Jays talk on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. If you're elsewhere across this great country of ours or someone else's country, which can't nearly be as great, you can find it at sportsnet590.ca. We are streaming live online on the interwebs, and we will continue to take your calls at 416-870-0590, *590, and 1-888-666-0590. We will sneak in one more call, and we will go to Dave in Barry, but not Dave Barry. Go ahead.
No, not Dave Barry. The key phrase I think everyone should just remember is do not panic. It is week one, week two of the season. So hopefully I'm not going in panic mode for you. But couldn't the Jays pick up another pitcher? There's still a pretty good one available. His name is Roy Oswalt.
Who has no interest in playing in Toronto.
He has no interest at all. Oh, wow. I figured, you know, maybe something can entice him.
Nope.
The younger crowd. No, nothing.
Nope. He doesn't want to pitch here. He don't want to pitch anywhere. He wants
to
pitch.
He's declined a lot of places.
Yeah,
I realize
he wants to pitch in St. Louis, and I think that's about it. So until they come around, he's happy to sit on the seat on the sidelines and wait.
All right. Well, it was a good good game. You know, it's tough breaks, but like I said, rule number one right now: do not panic. It's still really early.
Indeed, wise words, Dave Barry. Thank you very much for the call. It is still early, and let's not forget, the Blue Jays are in first place right now. They are admittedly tied with everybody else in the division, except for the Boston Red Sox, who are two games back. But they're in first place. No fun when you've blown three saves in the first week of the season. Of that, there is no doubt at all. But if the Blue Jays continue at this pace, which is to win four out of every seven games, and you do have to think that the blown saves are going to dry up at some point. They're on pace to win 93 games. Yes, it could be better. Yes, without the blown saves, they could be 6-1. But they could very easily be 1-6 as well. We need to take a look at the scoreboard, see what else is going on around these major leagues of baseball. We will do that, and remember the Extendo Blue Jays talk as the Honda Postgame Show continues on the Blue Jays Radio Network. Welcome back to Rogers Center. In the wake of a 7-5 loss, your Toronto Blue Jays falling to the Baltimore Orioles. The Jays had a 5-4 lead into the eighth inning, but Wilson Benamites, two out, two-run single off of Darren Oliver, gave the O's the lead for good. Blue Jays hit four home runs in the game, matching their season total to that point. Home runs by Colby Rasmus, Kelly Johnson, Yunel Escobar, and Edwin Encarnacion. And Jose Bautista goes 1-for-3 with a walk. His second hit since opening day. So here's hoping he's coming around. Let's take a look at what's going on elsewhere. We have two games on the go right now in the American League. The Rangers leading the Twins 4-1 in the bottom of the ninth. Ian Kinsler with his fourth home run already. Oakland at Seattle, 0-0. Bottom of the first, Mariners home opener Bartolo Colon against Felix Hernandez. Earlier today, the Indians scored seven runs in the first inning, ruining the Royals home opener. They went on to an 8-3 win. The Yankees beat the Angels 5-0. Alex Rodriguez with his 630th home run. He's tied tied with Ken Griffey Jr. for fifth on the all-time list. Red Sox beat Tampa Bay 12-2, but may have lost Jacoby Ellsbury for a while with a busted shoulder. White Sox won their home opener 5-2 over Detroit. Right now, extra innings in the National. Reds and Nats 1-1 in the 12th. Astros and Marlins 4-4. They are in the 10th. We will extend the Blue Jays talk on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, so stick around for that. Everybody else, tomorrow, Saturday, we're on at 3:30 Eastern for a 4:07 first pitch, Henderson Alvarez against Jason Hamill. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership. It may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership, the Blue Jays Radio Network. For Jerry Allen, Tom, Derek, and Joe, I'm Mike. Good night from Rogers Center.
Jose Bautista is at Joey Bats 19.
Monstrous 43rd home run for Jose Bautista.
Follow him, follow your Blue Jays on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
2-1 pitch, belted deep left field. That one is gone back into the 100 level, halfway up. Home run, Nolan Reimold. And he continues to torment the Blue Jays tonight. That's his first home run this season, and he's 3-for-5 as the Orioles go out in front 7-5.
And that was in the ninth inning. Reimold finishes a triple shy of the cycle, 3-for-5, single double homer, steals a base, scores 3 runs, and drives in only the one, but that one, a big insurance run. And the Blue Jays tried to rally in the bottom of the ninth. Infield single for Brett Laurie. J.P. Arencibia gets drilled in the ribs, so they put the tying run on, but Yunel Escobar gets behind 0-2 and winds up throwing his bat at a pitch to stay alive and flying out to right field to end the ballgame. 7-5 is your final score. The Orioles beat the Blue Jays, and like the Boston Red Sox, on opening night here Monday, take the first game of the series. The Blue Jays came back to win that series. They could very well come back to win this one. All of Baltimore's series so far this season have ended in sweeps. I have a feeling that's going to change. Phone lines are open. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We are doing the Extendo Blue Jays talk all the way to the top of the hour here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and of course, sportsnet590.ca. Let's get back to the phones. Andrew is in Toronto. Hello, Andrew.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
All right, thank you.
You know, it's always tough when you lose to the Orioles, but it was an exciting game. Morrow pitched. I don't think he had his best stuff. His fastball was getting crushed earlier in the game, but what I really wanted to talk about was in the eighth inning when Farrell brought in, or didn't bring in Jansen.
Yep.
I think you should have brought him in to face Wieters, actually, not before Bettemann got up.
Well, that's a possibility, right? That's a move that was open. You have Jansen, who last year at least was much better against left-handed hitters, against Wieters, who's better against left-handed pitchers, but Wieters is really crushing everybody this year.
Well, Wieters was so good, actually, against batting right-handed last year that they even thought about just scrapping the whole switch hitting thing altogether.
Right, and yet this year, batting left-handed, you know, he's got a 1250 OPS.
Right,
the tiny little
he's a good hitter either way, but by walking him, you're putting the runner on second, too, which means a single puts the Orioles ahead, which is what happened.
This is true.
So, I don't know, that's what I would have done, but it was still a good game. Would have liked to see Morrow have a bit of a sharper fastball and curveball, but he's a great pitcher. He's got great stuff, and I think he'll put it together again, and hopefully he'll have a good season.
Yeah, thank you. And I think this was a big game for Brandon Morrow. I really do, and I know that nobody's thoroughly impressed with him. 4 runs on 6 hits, 1 walk, 7 innings. He struck out 4, gave up 2 home runs, and had a lot of balls hit really, really hard. I mean, there were the 2 home runs. Reimold also doubled off the wall. Chris Davis flied out to the wall. So did Bettemann. So did Wieters. There were a lot of balls. Markakis hit one to the edge of the warning track in left center field. So I think it's safe to say 7 or 8 balls hit really hard off of Brandon Morrow tonight. And yet, he gutted it out. He gave them 7 innings. The home runs were solo shots, so they hurt as little as they possibly could have. He left the game with the lead, though that had more to do, obviously, with his offense than him. But he didn't bury them, and he didn't duck out after three or four. I really think that shows something. In the
progression. He definitely gutted. Yeah.
Yeah. In the continued progression and development of a pitcher. So, you know, even though Morrow didn't come with his best, he did a pretty good job. Thank you, Andrew. Let's go to Bob in Toronto. Bob, you're up next on the Jays Talk.
Hi, Mike. Two comments and a question. First comment is, you were talking about Kelly Johnson. I think Edwin Encarnacion.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he's really on the ball, too.
Edwin's off to a very nice start, too.
Yep, clutch doubles, clutch home runs. The second thing was, people are talking about Travis Snyder again. And he's had a lot of opportunities, and maybe he'll get another one, but Eric Thames came here last year for the first time, and he did a really nice job as a rookie.
He did okay.
Yeah.
He did fine. He didn't do a really good job. He did fine.
Well, as a first-year player, I thought he did pretty good.
Uh-huh. He did no. He did fine.
Yeah.
I mean, he had an on-base percentage of about .310.
Yeah.
So, I'll let you continue, but, I mean, the idea that he came up here and was – had some sort of fantastic season is that's just not the case.
No, I'm not saying he had a fantastic season, but put it this way, to compare the two, I think he had a longer stretch of consistency than Travis Snyder's ever had. And well, but anyways, the question is Henderson Alvarez, and he just seemed to come out of nowhere, and I was wondering if you can recall where he came from and what kind of seasons he had in the minors. And that's
Well, Henderson Alvarez is a guy we've been talking about for a long, long time. He I think, you know what, it was so long that people had kind of forgotten about him, and then he kind of came back.
Yeah.
He's, you know, when Henderson Alvarez was 16 years old when the Blue Jays signed him out of Venezuela.
Oh,
and
is
when
that
he
right?
Was, yeah, when he was 17, 18, they were talking about him as, look out for this kid. This is a future ace. He's really going to be something.
Yeah.
And last year, he finally put it all together and got to Double A for the first time and did really well at Double A, enough to earn a call up to the major leagues, where he was terrific for those 10 starts. And now it appears as though he's here to stay.
Yeah, I think he's a solid pitcher. Anyways, thanks, Mike. Good to talk to you.
All right, appreciate the call. He was off the radar, I guess, unless you're really watching this team carefully, but had a very good year in Lansing as a 19-year-old in 2009 in low A ball. Last year comes up to Double A, puts an ERA of 2.86, a WHIP of 1.11, just simply refuses to walk anybody throughout the course of his minor league career, and that's what got him the call. They love guys who throw strikes, and he comes up to the major leagues and he continued to throw strikes. Last year, 8 walks in 10 starts, 63 2/3 innings, and that's why he's sticking around. He is pitching tomorrow for the Blue Jays in the 4:00 game against the Orioles. This is the Extendo Blue Jays Talk. Couple of lines open. Give Joe Sicilia a call, and if he deems you worthy, he will let you talk to me. He's a lot tougher than I am. 416-870-0590. *590 on the cell. Long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Out to Kitchener. Henry, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you tonight?
I continue to be all right, thank you.
Yeah, I hear you've been sick. I hope you're getting better soon.
I appreciate
great job,
that.
By the way.
Thank you.
My question was, what are your thoughts on GP here in Sepia? I was watching tonight on TV, and Buck was talking about how his defensive play has gotten so much better, and I agree with him 100%. And your thoughts on Travis d'Arnaud and the minors? I think, like, I like Aaron Sieb. Everybody's saying that he's going to be the future for the Jays, but what are your thoughts on what do you think they'll do with the two in the future?
I think it's way too early to start thinking about that stuff. I mean, Travis d'Arnaud is on his way. There's no question about that. And everybody seems to think that he has big star written all over him. A higher ceiling. Right now, there's no question he's got a higher ceiling than J.P. Arencibia. As a hitter, he's a very good defensive player. But you look at what Arencibia has done, how hard he's worked on his defense, and watching him this first week, watching him in the spring, getting dirty, blocking balls in the dirt. Today he saved a blown save for at least a couple of seconds when he blocked that ball forward to Wieters. He's been working so hard and doing such a great job behind the plate and throwing guys out as well. I have no complaints about JPR and CBI.
I like his personality too. He seems very he's happy, he's young, that whole
He's a wonderful kid. And that doesn't win you ball games, but he's a wonderful kid, no question about that. And he's trying to become a face of this franchise, and they're enjoying having him do it. Now, that doesn't mean you can't move him, but I really don't think people should be penciling in Travis d'Arnaud as the Blue Jays catcher for the next X years and getting rid of JPR and CB all that quickly.
Okay, well, that's all I called. Well, thanks for your call. You're doing a great job, Mike.
Thank you. Appreciate it. That's not to say that if the Blue Jays find that they like d'Arnaud more and they think he can get the job done, that they wouldn't move Aaron Sebia, or they could just have them both for a couple of years. Now, try that, Michael Barrett, Brian Schneider thing that the Expos had 10, 15 years ago, although these are two right-handed hitters. But certainly that could work for a couple of years while you figure out who goes where. George Russick has an update. We don't like to keep George Russick waiting. But when he's done, we'll talk some more to you on the Extendo Blue Jays Talk. 416-870-0590, *590 if you're cellular. If you're long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Twitter is at Wilderness590, though I would really prefer to talk to you on the phone. So if you want to tweet, call instead. It's free. And we'll talk. It's Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The first pitch lined up the middle. That's a base hit into center field. That's going to bring home two runs. Weider stops at second. Bettamy goes back to first. He's just given Baltimore a 6-5 lead here in the top of the eighth.
And there it is, your third blown save in seven games. The Blue Jays wind up falling to the Baltimore Orioles 7-5 despite four home runs, all solo shots. Yunel Escobar, Edwin Encarnacion, Kelly Johnson, and Colby Rasmus. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Extendo Blue Jays Talk at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. The Blue Jays at 4-3, tied for first place in the American League East with Baltimore, New York, and Tampa. The Boston Red Sox are two games back at 2-5. We go back to the phones, out to Las Vegas. Don, you're on the Extendo Jays Talk.
It's Eric.
Oh, pardon me. We've got Eric in Toronto first. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Mike. Hey, so I guess if you look at it, Jays could easily be still undefeated this season, but things haven't been their way. But I guess
they could also easily be 1-6.
Yeah, that's true too. But on the bright side, it looks like Colby Rasmus looks—he's getting comfortable up at the plate recently.
He's looked comfortable at the plate all year. I thought, you know what? He hit on opening day. He hit two balls really, really hard. I thought he should have had a couple of doubles in different circumstances, and now they're starting to fall in a little bit or get out, as it were.
That's true. But I guess in the beginning, people have been ragging on him ever since last season with his batting, but he seems to be a really good pickup. But the only thing I'm concerned now is people ragging on Jose, even though he had a single tonight, but those strikeouts keep climbing up.
Well, so far no one has ragged on Jose Bautista, hopefully he's earned enough capital with the fans over what he's done, being the best hitter in baseball the last 2 years and all.
Yeah, for sure.
And don't forget that 2 years ago, in his breakthrough season of 2010, he hit under 200 in April. So this isn't something new from Jose, although I think, and I'm going to look up the numbers right now, I'm pretty sure he hit four homers in the month, and he's only got one so far, but we're only a week in. In April of 2010, he didn't hit under 200. He hit 213 with four home runs. He hit 179 in June of that year, and he still put up an MVP season. So it can come and go pretty quickly for Jose Bautista, and I would be surprised, given what he's done over the last 2 years, if he just completely fades away.
For sure. It's still early in the season. You saw Boston last season, bad start, but bad start this season too, but
yep.
Still early.
That's right. Still very early. Thank you. Right. Appreciate the call. Last year, Boston started 2-10, and by September 1st had the best record in baseball. Tampa Bay started 0-6 and wound up making the playoffs thanks, you know, to Boston. And the Blue Jays are 4-3, and again, they're on a 93-win pace, and that's with three blown saves in the first seven games. This team is not going to blow, what would it have to be, 69 saves? What's the opposite? What's 93? If you win 93, yeah, you lose 69. So we're not going to get 69 blown saves out of this team this year. I guarantee it. And already they are still above 500, still in first place. Now we go to Don in Vegas. Hello, Don.
Hey, Mike. Great to talk to you again.
How is Las Vegas?
It's going good down here. It's going really good. I just wanted to agree with you and say that this is exactly the kind of start I was looking for from Morrow to see whether or not he was going to take the next step. I thought he showed something that Farrell's been talking about a lot since last year, you know, leadership from the mound. You know, it seems like last year, you know, when he had his great stuff, he had 17 strikeout potential. Well, he didn't have his great stuff, you know, he was going to be gone by the fifth inning and, you know, tack the bullpen. And this looked much more
even
like
before
a,
the fifth inning.
What?
You know, sometimes he'd be exactly. gone in the third.
Yeah, and then, you know, Farrell's got to manage that. He's got to make sure he's got a long guy ready on a Morrow start in case he needs to, you know, piece together a second half of the game. But here, by the second or third inning, you know, he didn't have it, but he still got through seven on only 100 pitches and left with the lead, you know, and never looked like he lost control of his emotions or demeanor. That, to me, was what you're looking for to see if the guy is willing to take the next step.
I agree with you completely.
Their best stuff.
Yeah. I probably agree with you completely because you're agreeing with me, but that's cool anyway.
Yeah, but, you know, I do think, though, that the most important thing that's happened so far this season was Henderson Alvarez's start on Monday. All that talk over the offseason about, you know, we need someone to get behind these guys, we need someone to get behind the 1-2, who are we going to get, and that was the easiest seven innings I've seen probably since Juan Guzman first came up, you know?
I think he only went six.
Well, okay. All right.
Yeah, he only went six. But he looked terrific. The thing is, though, it's only 11 big league starts, right? And I don't know how ready we should be to say, and I've been fighting with this all spring because he's looked great, and he's looked great ever since he came to the big leagues. I don't know at what point you get to say, okay, no problem. He is the third starter. Well, he is, but I mean, this is a guy that we can rely on to be terrific game in and game out, to be someone that you can call a high middle-of-the-rotation starting pitcher. Because he only has 11 starts in the big leagues, and he's only 21. I guess Don's gone.
Clog up inning.
Oh, there he is. Sorry, say that again?
I agree with you, but I think he's shown enough that the management's thinking, we don't want to go out and get some mid-level journeyman who's going to take innings away from him.
This is absolutely the case.
Yeah, and that's why I'm glad they didn't go out and get you know, some of the retreads that they've done in the past, and give him his two, you know, 160, 170 innings, and then we'll all know about him here.
Yeah, and you know what? And thank you, Don. Appreciate the call. The Blue Jays were never going after a mediocre veteran inning eater, third or fourth starter type. They were looking for pitching in the offseason. If they could have gotten Matt Latos, they would have gotten Matt Latos. Something like that. Maybe a Gio Gonzalez, though I don't think they were as hot after him as some would suggest. But a top-of-the-rotation guy, that's what they were looking for. Otherwise, they weren't going to bring in somebody who was going to take innings away from Alvarez or Drabek or Dustin McGowan, as the case may be. They were never looking for that kind of starting pitcher. Ryan is in Hamilton. Hello, Ryan.
Hi, Mike. Why did Razai Davis lead off the ninth inning, down by two, with Ben Francisco sitting on the bench against a right-handed pitcher?
Because I don't know that Ben Francisco is a significantly better hitter than Razai Davis.
Razai Davis is terrible against right-handed pitchers. He's proven that over his career. And if you look at Ben Francisco's splits. He was terrible against.
He was terrible against right-handed pitchers last year.
He sure was.
Yeah, but that's not proven it over the course of his entire career. And Ben Francisco is kind of the, well, he's really nothing special. You know, he's there's nothing about Ben Francisco that makes you say we've got to get this guy in this situation.
No, I totally agree. It's nothing special.
And if Rajay gets on, he's a third base. I'll grant you it's a big if, but this is a 263 lifetime hitter against right-handed pitchers. I mean, he's not terrible by any means. He was last year. You can't argue that. But he's in the game for defense for Eric Thames. It's not like he pinch hit for Thames. So you've already used one guy off the bench. You know that if he gets on, he's at least on second base, probably third. That's why you got to let him hit in that situation.
Too, it doesn't really matter what base he gets to. I mean, you just need somebody to get on. Like, I don't know. I just thought Francisco would do a better job, but I guess it's close somewhat.
It's not like you're foregoing the opportunity to use this incredible hitter on the bench to let Rajay hit.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, agreed. Okay. He's not an all-star or anything, but yeah. Just trying to play the percentages.
Yeah, but the percentages at that point are so tiny, you know, the difference and the fact that it costs you a guy, and it's not worth making that move in that situation, I don't think. I mean, you can argue it, sure, and I don't know that there is, quote-unquote, a wrong answer other than protecting your bench and giving yourself the opportunity to have Davis stay in the ball game. But you know, Davis career 263 with a 306 on base against righties, and Francisco 259 with a 326 career on base against righties. It's not like you're lifting Rajay for a world beater here.
Yeah.
All
right.
Sorry.
Fair enough.
Okay. Appreciate the call. Now, again, as I mentioned earlier, John Farrell may consider waiting on that defensive replacement move, because there have been a couple of eighth inning opportunities where Rajay Davis's legs would have helped a lot. Tonight, when Adam Lind draws that one out walk in the eighth inning, there's your Rajay Davis pinch running opportunity. And he was already in the game for defense for Thames. So maybe he waits another inning. And that's happened twice already so far in six games. Let's go to Pickering. Ali, welcome to the Extendo Blue Jays Talk.
Yes, thank you for having me, Mike. You're doing a great job. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks for coming out of the closet.
yeah, I just have a comment and a question. Pretty much, I think I can have, you know, I can buy into the system that Alex Antopoulos has, you know, instituted here. And, you know, as long as we can remain competitive throughout the season and have a shot to make a wild card spot, I'm happy with that. And I'm happy with the start. But, I mean, I think it's clear by the trade deadline we're going to need to add, you know, at least one, if not two, component size. I mean, what are your thoughts on you know, where those, which pieces are need to be addressed six or seven games into the season, you know?
Well, it's by no means a perfect team, you know, and there's no team that's not going to need to add things at the trade deadline in order to get better. Where could the Blue Jays, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, like,
if you
honestly,
can get...
I'm not happy with, you know, kind of our leadoff hitter right now. You know, Escobar, I think that can be upgraded at that spot, at that position. Overall.
Seven games into the season.
Defensively, he's great, you know,
yes.
Great.
But yeah, and he's not an ideal leadoff man. There's no question that he's not an ideal leadoff man. He's very well suited to be a number two hitter, I think. But he's not that Michael Bourne type of leadoff guy that you would love to have there. Adam Lind has had a couple of off years in a row, and if he doesn't turn things around to get back to closer to where he was in 2009, you'd think that the Blue Jays could upgrade there in the middle of the order and at first base, and those would be the two glaring spots.
And
I would
at what
think.
Point do you think Schneider comes up?
I have no idea when Travis Schneider comes up. I don't know how long a leash they're going to give Eric Thames. I would expect that they would give him at least the month of April like they gave Snyder the month of April last year, almost. You don't want to be too quick to pull the rug out from underneath the guy. But Alex Anthopoulos did tell us in the spring when the Blue Jays sent Snyder out that this continues to be a competition, that Eric Thames still has to fight for his job as the Blue Jays' everyday left fielder. And so far, he's not doing a great job of fighting for it. He was 1-for-3 tonight, which makes him 5-for-22 on the season, which is a batting average, I don't know, somewhere below 230. They've already shown that they feel as though they need to replace him defensively in close games. That's not an issue with Travis Snyder. But they gave Eric Thames the job. We don't know how committed they are to him. But again, a week, 2 weeks in, it's very difficult to imagine them just yanking the rug out from under him. Travis Snyder, by the way, 4-for-5 tonight, is hitting .438 so far in Vegas. He has hit a grand slam. He has hit his fourth double of the year. He has 3 home runs on the season. He is making it very, very, very difficult for the Blue Jays to leave him down there. Danny in Toronto. Hello, Danny.
Yes, sir. I can't believe it. I was talking to your producer, and I was talking about the exact same thing. When did when do you think John Farrell has lost confidence in Thames' defense?
I don't think it's a matter of having lost confidence.
Well, I just happen to agree with you. I was thinking the exact same thing. I said, why wouldn't you have him on the bench? Especially, like you said, when you would have loved to have had him on the bench when Adam Lind drew that walk and get his legs out there at that time. I mean, he's not that bad in left field, is he? I know he had one go over his head in Cleveland.
He's looked really, really bad on a couple of balls so far this year, but only on a couple. But the fact is, Rajay Davis is a much better defensive outfielder than Thames, and with the lead...
Not at center, he wasn't. he was booting it around pretty good last year, but that's last year. I'm not even talking about that. Mike, I have another... Just a technical question for you, if you will, an attendance question.
Sure.
It used to be 50,000 plus all the time.
Yep.
When they announced the opening day crowd, they said 48,190, something around there. Have they taken out seats, or is that because of maybe all the boxes aren't filled in the old the restaurant? Would that be the case?
No, I don't think they counted the luxury suites in the restaurant. I'm not 100% sure about that. 48,473
yeah.
was a sellout on Monday night. It's because they used to count complimentary tickets. They don't anymore.
I see. That's great.
Yeah, they only count you if you paid to get in.
I got one quick one for you. I know you run out of time. Do you happen to know the guy's name that worked for the media that asked that ridiculous question of John Farrell the other night on opening night, like if he had a short leash on Sergio Santos?
No, I have no idea who it was.
I
don't remember.
He gets paid to do this. I mean, you know, if a fan does that, you know, I can understand. There's a lot of guys out there that don't know a lot about the game, but... That's kind of embarrassing, you know. What, Michael? You know, being a baseball fan, when you hear a media member asking a question like that, it sounds like he left the Leaf press conference and went straight to the Blue Jay one. Well, you understand what I'm saying?
I do understand what you're saying, and I'm sorry that a reporter embarrassed you. But you know what? The thing is, too, not that the question has to be asked by any means, because you're right. We all knew what the answer was going to be, and I'm sure the reporter who asked the question knew what the answer was going to be too. But you don't want to hear it from me or from anybody else. You want to hear it from John Farrell. So sometimes those stupid questions have to be asked so you can get the quote from the guy who the fans want to hear it from. I appreciate all the calls. Nice little Extendo Jays talk. Thanks to Joe Sicilia, Derek Brandeo, Tom Young. Thanks to all of you for listening. We're back on at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon. Blue Jays lose at 7-5 to the Orioles. We'll see you then.